It's field trip time. Jesus takes his disciples to Caesarea Philippi, which is all as far away as he ever goes from Jerusalem in his whole career. So he's up there, he's on the coast, and Caesarea Philippi is a city where, well, anybody who's anybody has a house there. I mean, you know, yeah, that's where Herod has a house, that's where Pilate lives. This is the nice place to be. You don't want to live in Jerusalem, it's just not that nice. But up there, you're by the coast, it's lovely. So everybody's there, and it's a lot of Roman people there. And Jesus is taking people up there. So they go to Caesarea Philippi, and they're sitting around. Well, here's an interesting thing about Caesarea Philippi. It is the place, one of the three places in the ancient world where there is a gate to Hades. It's a river that it's Mount Hermon, and there's a river that flows right into the mountain, and there's this big stone entryway, and it's quite cool. And that is in the ancient world, that was one of the gateways to Hades. So keep that in mind when we're talking about this, the story of Peter's confession. And not only that, but in the rock that is hewn, there's hewn these, all of these sculptures of the gods. Okay, so these are the gods of Hades, and Hades is the place of death. So these are the gods of death, all lined up. All right, and here's this gate, and here's Jesus saying, "Who do people say that I am?" And they different things. And Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." The Son of the living God, as opposed to the God of Hades, right? And these other gods who are shown in the rock. Isn't it beautiful that they put the look to the rock to which you are hewn in the first reading? It's beautiful. It's like picking up on this theme of the rock. Right, like this is all these gods who really pretty much identify with death, Hades. And then Jesus says, "Look to the rock from which you were hewn, which is the faithfulness of God, and all of the stories of faithfulness in our history." It's beautiful. And then Peter says this thing that he says, and Jesus says that God Himself, and Peter, you're not a good enough student to have come up on that on your own. God had to give that to you. And indeed, God did give that to you. And you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church. This rock, isn't that great? There's this big rock which is right there in front. It's the rock into Hades. And Jesus is saying, that's not the important rock. This is the important rock. Now, church has argued about whether he was looking at Peter and saying, "You are the rock on which I build my church," which is how we get the whole thing about Peter and the seat of Peter in Rome. As the rock, or it could be, we Lutherans like to talk about it, as the confession that he makes is the rock. "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." That's the rock. Okay. So, that's been debated throughout our history, and I don't have any more. The point being, though, that it isn't that rock. The rock that leads to Hades, that rock is not it. Right? But the Son of the living God, it's the living God and the rock of that's where God's church will be established. And the gates of Hades, the gates of hell, will not be able to stand against it. And whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. And the keys of the kingdom are given to the church. Isn't that beautiful? And isn't that sad? Because unfortunately, I think the church has decided that it's much more interested in binding things than loosing things. Binding people than loosing people. You can see it all the time. I mean, there's so much animosity between one and another and blame between one and another. So I'm going to take you back to 2009. And this was when there was the big vote about whether LGBTQ people could be ordained and whether we could do same-sex marriage in the Lutheran Church. It was a big thing, and it was very divisive, and the church really did divide. So it was the Synod Assembly where we, in our Synod, here in this geographical area, had to vote on whether we agreed to that or not, agreed to the idea that LGBT people could be ordained and we could do same-sex marriages. And we're in the Synod Assembly, and there are these workshops going on about all of these things. And one of the workshops was given by Lutherans Concerned. It's an organization that was very much advocates of queer people, and you know they do a lot of good work, and they're doing this workshop. And they want to present the whole thing before everybody. And they're starting to present everything. And then, but before too long, all of a sudden, people are starting to talk about churches, specific churches, and how lousy they were to people who were LGBTQ people, right? And then another person said, yeah, and this church over here did the same thing, and they weren't welcoming, and this and that. And then there was another one, and another one, and all of a sudden, it was like, holy mackerel. And somebody finally said, y'all are doing the same thing to them as that you are accusing them of doing to you, to us. What's going on here? Well, what's going on here is that we're more interested in binding things than loosing things. Well, the good news is that once that was spoken, people tried to get more energy and more traction, but it just stopped. There was no more energy in the room. That was the good news. The bad news was there was no energy left in the room. If we couldn't bind, we didn't have energy to loose either. We didn't have energy to forgive. We didn't have energy to think of it differently. We didn't have energy to say, those are our brothers and sisters. How can we bring them along if we want to bring them along? How do we do that? How can we live in such a way as to show them that we are faithful followers of Jesus as they are? But no, we didn't have the energy for that. Darn. Because we're so much more interested in binding than in loosing. So, in that particular, and in many other ways, we tend to want to bind. And Jesus, I think, is way more interested in loosing. That's what I think the gospel is for liberating, for freeing us. And fortunately for me, on Friday afternoon, someone came into the office and had to tell me this story. And I asked if I could tell the story, and she said, oh, absolutely, I'd love for everybody to hear it. So, this is the spirit of Jesus at work. And a way in which we can follow, maybe like pay attention to this. So, she comes in, and she says, well, the story is this. I'm the single child of my father. My mother died, and my father remarried. It's the classic evil stepmother thing. I'm sorry about that for stepmothers in the room, but that's what this thing happened. So the stepmother steps in, and then her father drops dead. And at the reading of the will, this woman finds out that she, the only daughter of this man, was cut out of the will. And three stepdaughters were in. Horrible, right? Just this, and she is living with this horrible thing. She's hurt. She's angry. As she says, I played the victim very well and delighted in it sometimes because it was the only thing I had. Okay, so she is just getting beaten up by this over time. And she finally, she says, I got to do something. So she goes on a retreat. She goes on this retreat, and partway through the retreat, she has this idea, I know what I'll do. I will revisit this experience, the experience of the will being read, and that horrible gut punch that she received, and I will stand with myself, my younger self, right? Not a bad idea, and give that my younger self support so that I don't have to be living this way. All right, great idea. And so she's kind of thinks about that, she starts to meditate on that, and God says, cute idea, I got a better one. So God usurps the vision And she actually goes into this vision, and in the vision, she's not sitting next to her old self, her younger self, rather. She's above the whole scene. And she sees everybody in the scene, the lawyer, the stepmother, the stepchildren, everybody in that room, and herself, of course. And she sees everybody's brokenness in that room. And she is filled with compassion for everybody. For everybody. She comes out of her vision and she says, "Oh my, wow. That's what God's looking at." But it's not over. That night she goes to bed. And she has a dream. And in this dream, it's dark. It's not like scary dark, she said, but it's just dark. And her insides start to grind up. There she's just feeling kind of queasy inside, right? And then from what comes out of her is this black, oozy stuff. And she, when it's done, she says, "What is it? What is that?" And a voice comes to her. "Daughter, that's all the hate I am taking out of you." Mm-hmm. "That's all the hate I am taking out of you." And when she wakes from that dream, she's a free person. That's what Jesus is talking about when he says that this promise of God, this love of God, this mercy of God will loose you, will set you free. Stop worrying about binding people so much. Pay attention to where God is loosing us, where God is liberating us from the powers of death, from that stream that we all want to jump in, going down all the way into Hades. Hades, hated, hatred, all of that stuff. It's all, we try to just enter into that stream. It's as if we think we have to enter into that stream, like the slave who won't forgive, right? Because that's the pattern that we're in. That's the system we're in. But we're not. We have been liberated. God's word and promise are that you are loved, that you have been shown mercy unimaginably. And that living into that mercy, living into that love, is what we are for. And every time we experience that, every time we live into that, if you listen closely, you'll hear this little jingle. It's the jingle of the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Enter in. Keep your eyes open. Keep your hearts open. God is at work. Look to the rock from which you are hewn. That rock, which is the promise of the living, loving